Several of you came up to me before the service started this morning and took notice that the stole around my neck is not one that I normally wear at Christ Church. In fact, the cathedral owns a set of lovely embroidered white damask stoles that my colleagues mostly are wearing this morning, and my stole doesn't match those or our beautiful cathedral hangings. Even so, it is important to me to wear this stole today because today is August the 6th, which is the date on which we celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration. The Transfiguration is, as we just heard in Luke's Gospel, that event at which Peter and James and John first experienced Jesus in his truest form, in divine glory. But why this stole on this day? Well, going back almost to the time of Jesus himself, Mount Tabor in Galilee has been considered the site of the Transfiguration. And a little more than a year ago, I stood on the summit of Mount Tabor with a group of fellow pilgrims, and I celebrated the Eucharist in the open air using a rock as an altar and wearing this stole, perhaps on the very plot of ground where Jesus stood, or perhaps rather where the three apostles grew heavy with sleep, or perhaps on the spot to which Peter pointed and said he'd build those three booths. Regardless, we were on holy ground. And that day, this very stole was a companion for me, connecting me to one of the Bible's most auspicious events. But what is the Transfiguration? And why does it matter? In the Synoptic Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the Transfiguration is actually the hinge, it's the pivot of the entire Jesus story. Did you know that? The first half of that story, before Jesus and his friends climb Mount Tabor, is really a story about a teacher and a wonder worker who travels around Galilee healing the sick and exorcising demons, making life more bearable for the people that he meets. The second half of the story, after Jesus and his friends come down from the mountain, is about a man whose face is set hard toward Jerusalem, who marches without wavering toward his own death, and who finally defeats death on Easter. After the Transfiguration, Jesus performs very few miracles, and he offers relatively little balm. Instead, he shows the depth of God's love by giving his very life in love, by refusing to match destructive power with destructive power, and by breaking the bonds of the grave. It's two different stories, really, with a pivot in the middle. And that pivot is the Transfiguration. So what makes the difference? What changes on that mountain? Well, we'll come back to that in a minute, I promise. From the top of Mount Tabor, if one looks to the southwest, one actually sees another hill. It's much shorter and it's flat on top. It is Tel Megiddo. And that hill, that shorter hill, stands sentry at the northern end of the only pass through the Carmel Mountains. Long before Jesus climbed Mount Tabor, Megiddo, that other hill, had an illustrious and bloody history. For centuries, Egyptian armies marching up from the south and the armies of various empires marching down from the north collided at that spot, at Megiddo, as it opened up to the Jezreel Valley northeast of the Carmel Mountains. The Jezreel Valley was the first flat expanse of land for miles in any direction. And so it became the site of more epic battles than one could count. The great Old Testament king Josiah, for instance, died at Megiddo when he vainly tried to stop the Egyptian Pharaoh from marching north. And not all the battles at that spot are ancient. As recently as the First World War, 100 years ago, British General Edmund Allenby decisively beat the Ottoman Turks at Megiddo. Now, you may be sitting here thinking that you're hearing about Megiddo for the first time this morning, but I promise you are not. You see, in biblical times, both the history and the myths surrounding bloody Megiddo were so potent, so well known, that in his great vision of the apocalypse, St. John the Divine imagined that hill and the plain surrounding it as the site of the world's great final cosmic battle. But St. John wrote his revelation in Greek, and the Greek name for Megiddo is Armageddon. So you see, on that bright day last year, when the pilgrims and I looked down from Mount Tabor, we were staring at Armageddon. And the same was true of Jesus 2,000 years before. As Jesus pierces the veil between the material and spiritual worlds, as he confers with God's great prophet Elijah and with God's great lawgiver Moses, he does so while gazing down at the most devastating place the world had ever known. One of the bloodiest places the world will ever know. And if St. John is to be believed, the place where the ultimate pitch between good and evil will finally be fought and won, one way or the other. Jesus would have looked down on that plain of death, that center of destruction, and intuited the end game of what humanity does to humanity. The pain that we cause, the violence, the disregard. He'd have seen through the eye of his soul the havoc to come in human life, maybe all the way down even to our own day. And I suspect that it was right then that Jesus had enough. If shadows could be cast upward, then Megiddo surely would have enshrouded Tabor in darkness. Except at that moment, Jesus, the light that darkness cannot overcome, chooses to shine for the first time in glory. He is transfigured and suffused with that light, everything looks different. You know how the world looks through that first sunbeam after days of rain? How new, how innocent, how full of promise. Now imagine that magnified exponentially. In that moment, Peter and James and John see the world for the first time as it truly is, as God created it to be, not dark with death, but alive with splendor. There's so much light that they're confused and terrified. Their minds become foggy because they, like us, are so accustomed to seeing the world as a dark and foreboding place and mistaking the shadows for reality. But not Jesus. the splendor that shines through him, through his connection to God, makes him resolute. From Mount Tabor, he walks down into Armageddon, into that place of so much human destruction, and through it, and he turns toward Jerusalem. From that moment on, Jesus will not stop or stumble. He will give everything to walk through our Armageddons, to dispel our shadows, to break open the tombs in which we encase ourselves, to burn away the clouds that confuse us, and to reveal to us that love is the only real thing, and that it suffuses this world. Just as for Peter and James and John, this is the moment that we too must decide which world is real and which world we will live in and live for. What are we to do? We are to see this world transfigured and to make our decisions to hate or to love, to brood or to shine, to cower in booths or to walk steadfastly through the plains of destruction in favor of light and life, all in the wake of the world's splendor. Christ is transfigured, and Christ transfigures the world. It has never been more important than it is right now. So do you see it? And will you bring Mount Tabor into Armageddon? Amen.